broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University. This is WSDL Ocean City 90.7 FM, Delmarva Public Radio. It's time now for a special writer's edition of Delmarva Today with host Harold Wilson.
Clouds darken and charcoal waves spill across the sand like tattoo ink sliding down my father's forearm. I swim buoyant in my skirted suit under the umbrella's shadow, hair hanging like fresh seaweed. I dip my damp fingers into a bucket of fries for another bite. The gulls circle overhead, hungry sailors swerving over our shoulders. Under the flannel sky, the ocean unrolls its tongue. It can't always be blue. Cloudy Day by Tina Ray Dayton in her prize-winning book, The Softened Ground. Welcome to Delmarva Today, Writer's Edition. I'm your host, Harold Wilson. Well, spring is here. At least it's trying its best to make its presence felt after an obnoxious winter. We are tempted now to turn our thoughts to warm air draping our shoulders, cool sands embracing our toes, which means, of course, the beach. The beach. According to the U.S. Life Saving Association, there were more than 241 million visits to the beaches of this country last year. On the Delmarva, Bethany Beach, Dewey Beach, and Ocean City accounted for over 5.4 million of those beach visits, and Rehoboth alone for 3 million. Is there any wonder you thought the beach was crowded? Well, what do all these millions of people do when they cluster on the edge of the continent? In addition to baking in the sun, bathing in the surf, walking a convenient boardwalk, or just zoning out to the murmur of beach sounds, they often find solitude by burying themselves in the pages of a good book. In fact, there is a whole genre of literature called beach reads, designed for the seaside environment. My guest for this first segment of Delmarva Today, Writer's Edition, are Nancy Sakadusky, founder of Cat and Mouse Press in Lewis, Delaware, and editor of The Boardwalk, the second publication of the Rehoboth Beach Read Short Story Contest, and Keith Phillips, author of The Watch, a judge's award-winning short story in The Boardwalk, which we're going to hear Keith read a little later. In the second segment of the program, we'll offer a radio drama, The Ocean at Night, based on a short story of the same name by Heather Davis, published in The Boardwalk. The play is a magical drama and features members of the Community Players of Salisbury. Nancy, an attendance of 3 million at the beach in Rehoboth. That's quite a market for beach reads, I would say. Tell us, what is a beach read, and what inspired the Rehoboth Beach Read Short Story Contest?
Well, Hal, when I go on vacation, I always like to read stories that take place in the area where I'm visiting. I think it really helps people get in the mood, and I think this area, the Rehoboth area, is so filled with interesting things to do, things to see. And so I think stories that have to do with Rehoboth Beach are natural for beach reads. Beach reads don't have to be about the beach. They're generally light, short stories or easy-to-read novels. But I think the fact that they're set at the beach sort of really puts you in the mood for lying on the beach and reading them.
So they're short enough available enough that you can read them without worrying about the kid on the next blanket kicking sand on you, or the radio on the other side blaring at you.
You can be distracted for a few minutes, and you haven't lost your place. It's, you know, they're short. You can read one at a sitting, get up and get a piece of pizza, come back and read the next one. And each one is different, so it's a different experience each time you read one of the stories.
Well, I have to say, Nancy, I read the first book in the contest, The Beach House, mm-hmm. and we talked about that almost a year ago now, and I found the stories in The Beach House, even though you classify them kind of as beach reads, I found that the majority of them had some substance to them. And in addition to being somewhat light reading, which I think you're after with a beach read, there was also a little bit of literary substance as well.
Well, I like to think light doesn't mean low quality. These are definitely high-quality stories. The judges really take the time to go through the entries and choose the best stories. So the stories are all well-written. They're well-constructed, as I'm sure you'll see from Keith's and from Heather's stories. But they're the kinds of stories people enjoy reading at the beach. And I have to say, you know, with having such a great writing community here, we have so much talent to choose from. And it's a great opportunity for the beginning writer to get published, but even experienced writers find it's great visibility. So we get a really diverse group of entrants, and that helps feed the quality of the stories we publish.
Well, we'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. But I noticed that the first book in the contest was The Beach House. And then I read the second book in the contest, and the title of that book is The Boardwalk, and I thought, well, I'm noticing a pattern here. Nancy, how does the contest work, and how do we get the Beach House 1 year and the Boardwalk another year?
I try to give the writers a theme each year so that there's some thread that ties the stories together in each book, but I try to make the theme broad enough that it doesn't restrict the writer's creativity. The theme this year is Beach Days, which is even broader. It's sort of setting up next year's theme, which will be Beach Nights. But I try to get a theme that gives a little bit of a creative push without being too restrictive.
Well, I have to say, I read the stories in The Boardwalk, and I was a little disappointed that there was only one story set under The Boardwalk. I was expecting something a little...
That may be a little too much information for us.
Well, that might well be. But I do have to say that the carving of the initials and so forth in that story under The Boardwalk was quite...
That's what's so fun about the stories is people will, it'll spark memories of people's experiences in Rehoboth or even at any beach, but particularly Rehoboth.
Sure.
And so people respond to different things from their own experiences and memories.
Well, there was a prize of $500.
Yes.
And well, let me ask you, I do understand that Browse About Books, the bookstore in Rehoboth, was involved in the contest. What was their involvement?
They, from the very beginning, have been the sponsor of the contest. They've been very generous in their support. The first prize in the previous contest, $500, they funded the prize completely. This year, they increased it. So there's not only a $500 first prize, there's a $250 second prize and a $100 third prize. So they have been extremely supportive of the contest. The books have been very prominently displayed in the store. They're very popular. A lot of the tourists are buying them as well as the residents. And so Browse About has really been a big part of the process.
Well, were they one of the initiators of the contest, or how did they come to get involved?
It was actually my idea for the contest, and I I knew I would need at least one sponsor, and I went to them first because they're really the focal point for the writing community and the reading community in the area, and I knew they would be the best sponsor I could get if I could get their support. And we talked about what an amount would be that would attract good quality writers, and we settled on $500, and they were generous enough to agree to fund the entire amount, and so I never looked at additional sponsors.
Right. Well, they will Browse About Books, I understand, is very active in the the Rehoboth community, but in the beach community along the eastern shore of the, Delmarva.
They're one of the biggest independent bookstores in the Mid-Atlantic region, and they've been there 40 years. This is their anniversary year. And on May 2nd, they're going to be celebrating that 40th anniversary along with Independent Bookstore Day with a whole day's worth of activities with all sorts of fun things for kids and for adults and for writers. They're going to do a literary happy hour, which should be a lot of fun on May 2nd. So they're a really key part of the whole process.
Well, I understand that this year's contest is open.
Yes.
Now, remind us again of what the theme is, and is the submission period open, how do people submit?
The submission period is open until July 1st, and all the details are on the website, which is catandmousepress.com. The submission can be through email. I don't accept printed copies mailed. But the payment can be, it's a cost of $10 per entry. The payment can be either paid online through PayPal or mailed as a check. And writers can submit up to 3 stories between 500 and 3,500 words. But as I said, all the details are on the website so people can see that the theme is beach days. The story has to fit that theme, has to have a connection to Rehoboth Beach, but the writers can be from anywhere.
Yeah, I wanted to ask that. How broad a geographic area have your submitters come from?
We actually got an entry from Germany 1 year. So I think anybody that's visited Rehoboth Beach and has a sense for the area is certainly welcome to submit. We definitely get a lot of local people. And because of the high-quality writers groups in this area between Eastern Shore Writers Association and the Rehoboth Beach Writers Guild, we get a lot of their members submitting because they've had the benefit of writing classes and meetings and so forth. But we've had people, we had a college student 1 year at the University of Delaware get into the book. So, you know, the judges don't know the writers' backgrounds. The stories have to stand on their own.
The judges read blind, do they?
They do. They get the story name and the story as submitted. I don't change anything at all. But they do not know the name. They don't know anything about the writer, the background, the age, anything.
And Browse About Books is involved again. And remind us again what the prize money is this year. I know it was $500 last year, time.
Yes.
What is it this year?
It's $500 for first prize, $250 for second prize, $100 for third prize, and the top... It's hard to tell because it depends on the length of the stories that are selected, but the top 20 to 30 stories will make it into the published book.
And, of course, as a writer, I would consider that the biggest prize.
Most people do. And then each judge, we have 6 judges, each judge selects a story that did not win one of the cash prizes, but that they felt deserved special merit. The prize money is determined by a group vote of all of the judges, but the judges often have a favorite of their own, and so that gives them an opportunity to award a prize for their own favorite.
Oh, good. Well, tell us some more about Browse About Books celebration coming up. You mentioned it. But,
yes.
Tell us.
They have a lot of information on their website, which is browseaboutbooks.com, and that's BROWSEABOUT. Their activities start at 7 a.m. with free coffee for a period of time and go till 8 p.m. at night. And their theme is they've been well-read since 1975. And so they're playing off the word red. So there's going to be red ice cream, Clifford the Red Dog, a lot of things having to do with red. But then there are a whole morning of kids' activities. And then in the afternoon at 1 o'clock, there's cake and champagne. The happy hour starts at 4 p.m. The Boomer Babes from NPR are going to be there. There'll be some literary trivia. They're going to have prizes and giveaways all day. It's really going to be a lot of fun. And I hope the writing community in particular comes out and supports them, because they have certainly helped the local writers and been a big part of our reading and writing community in Rehoboth.
Well, obviously, people can get, our listeners can get the Boardwalk at Browse About
yes.
Books. Where else can
they find that? That
is
actually
the
only place.
Oh.
This was a choice I made. They did not require this at all, but to thank them for their support of the contest, I make Browse About the only retail outlet.
So can you order it online?
You can order
Browse
it online, and Browse About will ship. And you can order it online through the big ordering services. And if you have a local bookstore, if you're not in the area and you go into a bookstore, they can certainly order it. But we only promote it really through Browse About.
Yeah. Well, one of the excellent stories, and I believe received a judge's award, is a story entitled "The Watch." And Keith, you are the author of that story. Tell us just a bit about yourself, and how did you come to submit that story to the contest?
I am a Sussex Countyan all of my life, except for 7 years in the military and 4 years in college. I've been writing off and on for a number of years. Started taking classes with the Rehoboth Beach Writers Guild. And then in 2013, my wife and I moved to Rehoboth. Love it there. I walk the beach a lot of sunrises. And the story is based on two different experiences that I had on a sunrise walk. And the rest was one of those things that just came. And so that's pretty much it in a nutshell.
So you didn't personally find a watch?
Oh, yes, I did.
And say, oh, there's a story in this watch.
Actually, I did. The sunrise really was incredibly beautiful. And then when I found the watch, I thought, this is really neat. But the idea of a story just percolated inside for a while before it came.
Well, it's a very clever story, Keith. Would you read it to us, please?
Sure. After many years of teaching history to college students, he has retired to this place, this Eden on the ocean. Daily, when the weather is good, and sometimes when it isn't, he drives into town, parks in front of Dave and Skippy's bagel shop on Wilmington Avenue, and walks from the Green Turtle south to the big yellow house on the corner of Prospect, and watches the sunrise. He walks on the beach, not the boardwalk, and so only sees Playland and Funland and other shops and hotels and houses from a distance. The walk is a half a mile south and a half a mile north, and is his cardiovascular exercise. It is more peaceful, more satisfying than a treadmill. Each sunrise is an affirmation of life renewed. This is a good morning to walk. The crispness of early fall invigorates him, helps him feel younger than his 70-odd years. As he walks across the boardwalk, he sees that the clouds along the horizon are no more than indigo daubs and splotches with rosy streaks to them. He crosses the dune and walks to the waterline. Offshore, maybe 5 miles away, is a dark silhouette of a ship backlit by the dawn's increasing light. He watches, wondering what cargo it's carrying and where it's bound. The light of the not-yet-visible sun continues to intensify. Suddenly, in a moment, the sky's colors shift and change. The rising sun, still not breaking the horizon, transforms a glassy sea, changing its indigos and blacks into an intense rosiness. The sea seems to burn as a ship sails toward the sun. He thinks of the phrase, a sea of blood, but that is not this sea. It's too light-toned. It's too beautiful. No, not the color of blood, but the essence of rosiness. He is so moved by the beauty his eyes missed. Atmospheric conditions continue to play with the scene in his mind. Beyond the silhouetted ship, out along the horizon, are 7 or 8 dark blobs, puffy clouds, he thinks. But his imagination sees them as ships. He has read memoirs from the early 40s, when it was a blood-red sea, and convoys were attacked just offshore by U-boats, and ships burned at night. As the sun breaks the horizon, the rosiness becomes more intense, almost blinding, beautiful beyond compare. He is so drawn by the spectacle, he wants to join the ship and sail into the rosy sea and what lies beyond it. He wants to share this moment with someone, but whom? Who would see the convoy? Who would know about U-boats? Who would understand? He smiles, thinks sometimes he is too imaginative. Those dangerous days are long gone, and most people know nothing of them. The sun fully breaking the horizon ends the illusion. A cold brightness erases the convoy lying offshore and leaves a single ship sailing on its mundane path to an unknown port. He has stared at the sun so long, the brightness has almost blinded him. Everything has an aura. He resumes his walk, and his peripheral vision catches something. It is so unexpected he almost misses it, and at first doesn't realize what it is, and wonders if his eyes are playing tricks on him. He stops, stares at the numbers lying on top of a small cliff carved by last night's high tide. A man's watch lies completely exposed. Its white face is marred by 2 small spots of rust, and water has entered the crystal. He picks up the watch, tries it on, and immediately sees why the watch has been lost. The locking mechanism on the band is broken. He looks at the face and sees the name of the watch's maker, Tissot. Is it an expensive watch? Who lost it? How had it been lost? When? Where? How had the watch's owner felt when he discovered it missing? There's a story here, he thinks. Sometimes there is justice in this world, she thinks. Sometimes, not often, but sometimes working hard is rewarded. She had caught a mistake on a contract prepared by a senior partner. It was a small mistake, really, but it was a critical mistake. The partner who had prepared it had already left, so she took it to the managing partner. Can you fix it? He had asked, and she nodded. She had finished at midnight and handed it to him when he came in at 6. Okay, he had said. That had been on Tuesday. Thursday noon, he had called her into his office, handed her a check for $500, and told her to have a nice weekend. See you Wednesday, he had said. In 2 hours, she packs, leaves her apartment in Arlington, traverses the Beltway, and crosses the Bay Bridge. Soon, Kent Narrows and Stevensville and Denton are behind her. It is early June, and traffic is light. Her swift trip stops in Georgetown, a coal train heading for the power plant in Millsboro. Ka-thunks as it slowly bumps its way along the tracks. It blocks all the crossings. She has no patience for lines, so she pulls into a parking spot just vacated by a state trooper and runs across to the pawn shop on the corner. She is a browser and loves to look and touch and imagine. With the pawn shop's bounty, she could equip a large rock band with guitars, a brass section, and several sets of drums. She could play their CDs on stereo after stereo and dress the musicians in a weird assortment of coats and jackets, adding bling until they sparkled. She stops at a display case close to the cash register. In the left rear, alone, overwhelmed by the gold glitz of the Rolexes, and the magnificence of a Patek Philippe, is a no-nonsense watch, a competent-looking watch. She likes it. It has functional beauty. It's a watch for the 21st century man, stainless steel from band to bezel. Is it to sew? The store manager tells her. Company's been in business since the 1850s. It retails new for $1,100. Guy going through a divorce. Needed the cash. Nice guy. Known him for years. For you, $750. Her mother had taught her to never buy at the first price. They settle on $550. Mind the clasp, he says. It's not working quite right. Yes, she thinks. Steve will love it. He's never owned a really nice watch. The train clears the crossing, and the backed-up traffic inches its way through town. 32 minutes later, she is at the house on Robinson Drive. It had belonged to her grandparents and now belongs to her parents, and someday it will belong to her and her sister and two brothers. And they'll mock fight about what weeks each will get, and she won't care. It's off-season now, and her siblings' children are still in schools and academies. Steve is staying at the house, working on his dissertation, and he will be surprised to see her, and will love the additional days they'll have together. He is expecting her to arrive Friday evening, maybe Saturday morning. She usually calls to let him know, but decides today is special. It's a day for surprises, not to be spoiled by a phone call. The door is locked, and when she enters, she senses he is not there. The house feels unused, unlived in. There are no dirty dishes in the sink, and that's unusual. It is not Steve. His only fault, she thinks, is that he's messy. The milk in the refrigerator is sour, and she remembers telling him the previous weekend he needed to replace it. She is more curious than worried. When she checks the bedroom, she sees throw pillows on the bed. Steve hates them, never puts them on the bed, or makes the bed. It's just as she had made it Monday morning. Now she is worried. She takes her phone out of her jeans pocket and calls his cell. Hey, babe, he says. How you doing? You coming down tomorrow night or Saturday morning? For a moment, she stands, mute, uncertain, scared. She doesn't let the tremulousness of her body sneak into her voice as she tells him Friday night. After a moment's hesitation, a moment that seems to last a long time, a moment she's never expected, she asks him, where are you? At the house, he replies, working those damn statistical analyses. Think I'll catch a pizza soon, he says. Maybe I'll get it delivered so I don't have to stop work. She says, see you, and for the first time in 2 years, it doesn't end with love you. She sits at the kitchen table, is numb, and then angry, and then sad, and she uses a paper towel to wipe her tears. Where is he? Who is he with? What are they doing? There are no answers Steve could provide that wouldn't be lies. 2 years of happiness and love end at 5:15. On a Thursday afternoon. She leaves the house, crosses the bridge, follows the banks of the lake and finds Prospect Street, the end and beginning of the boardwalk. She pays no attention to the big yellow house on the south corner or the age-darkened cedar house on the north. She turns left onto the boardwalk. There are few people on the boardwalk, and she easily threads her way through the strollers. She sinks into herself. Becomes cold and remote, and she ignores other people. She passes hotels and shops and beachfront homes and white-painted benches, and they are all the same to her. She refuses to cry. She refuses to mourn what is lost. Should she call again and tell him she's at the house and listen to more lies that cannot change the truth? No, she won't do that. She walks on and on, and she ignores the shouts and laughters and playland and the little boy carrying a stuffed tiger as big as he, and she ignores the smells of hamburgers and hot pizza and the mewing of the gulls as a little girl throws them beach fries, and ignores the shouts of a group of teenagers playing tag football on the beach in front of dollies, and ignores the young couple who lean against a light standard, kissing, smiling. She is at the end of the boardwalk. She stands and stares toward the sea, shivers in the henlopen shade, and thoughts and emotions roll through her mind like waves. She turns and begins the walk south. Suddenly, in front of the railroad house, she stops and turns toward the sea. She opens her purse and removes a watch. She stares at it and then, expressionless, crosses the dune and walks toward the water. It is low tide and it seems a long walk. And when she reaches the water, she raises her right arm. And with all her strength, all her sadness, she throws the watch. As it passes its arc, it catches the sun, reflects it, and then falls into the sea. The walker, now at home, puts the watch in a plastic bag and makes it part of his beach finds collection, setting it next to a pair of barnacled sunglasses. He boots his computer, opens Word, and begins to type. Sometimes there is justice in this world.
Wonderful story, Keith. Thank you.
Thank you.
We hope you're going to enter the next contest as well. It's really quite well done.
Thank you.
And you, is this the first publication, or have you published?
No, I've written a lot and have published nothing. I've made one submission to a short story contest, and they said I just missed. I was right on the cusp, was they're saying. And I thought, well, it's an uncomfortable place to be.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. Well, I certainly hope you'll keep writing and enter the contest for next year, and maybe even find a few other venues that you might submit your work to. I think Nancy Sakadusky might be of some help with that. She's a master marketer. Nancy, you do a bit of marketing work.
I do.
Tell us about the marketing work you do.
Well, my background is actually business. I have an MBA and I have a marketing background. So I do think marketing whenever I take on a project. But I also try to support local writers. And this story like Keith's is what I really enjoy about what I'm doing, to give a talented writer a chance to be published and to get some recognition and hopefully be on the path to additional publications is extremely rewarding.
Well, you publish an internet piece,
yes.
I believe, once a weekly it comes
yes.
out. Tell us about the piece that you publish.
I actually have two newsletters. One is an emailed newsletter that comes out once a month, and that features a few columns, a lot of local events, and various pieces of news. But I have a weekly publication called Writing is a Shore Thing. That's S-H-O-R-E for being near the shore. And that comes out every week, and I try to put in a lot of varied advice, different writing tips, information on how to self-publish, as well as local events and news. But I focus more on things that I think will help local writers, no matter what they're working on, whether it's children's literature, mysteries, thrillers, even nonfiction. Sometimes people forget about that, but that's writing too. And of course, grammar and the mechanics of writing as well. And both are free. You can sign up for either one on the Cat and Mouse Press website. Writing is a Shore Thing has its own website, writingisashorething.com. And if you sign up for it, it just arrives in your email box and you can scan it and click on whatever articles appeal to you.
Well, I think it's a wonderful help for the writers on the Eastern Shore.
I try to post a lot of information on our Facebook pages, too, particularly focused on short stories, because that's sort of becoming a main focus for us. But writing in general, and certainly I try to promote local writers' successes and local writers' group meetings.
Well, Nancy Sakadusky, Keith Phillips, thank you for being on Delmarva today. Writer's Edition, and for your support Nancy, of the writers in the Delmarva area, and for your excellent short story, Keith. We enjoyed it greatly.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short break now, and when we come back, we'll present our drama, The Ocean at Night, based on the story by the same name, written by Heather Davis, and published in The Boardwalk. I'm your host, Harold Wilson. This is Delmarva Today, Writer's Edition. We'll be right back. Please stay with us.
Tune in to the Delmarva Almanac on Saturday afternoons at 3:30 on WSCL 89.5 FM or Wednesday evenings at 6:30 on WSDL 90.7 FM. Every week, meet local artists, hear fascinating stories about our heritage, our way of life, and our natural wonders. Join us weekly and get connected to the rhythms and tides of your community. Don't miss it.
When you listen to Folk Alley, you experience a tradition that's been handed down for hundreds of years. I'm Elena C., and Folk Alley is a link in the chain that includes the ancient child ballads and the latest releases from your favorite singer-songwriters. Bluegrass, Celtic, Americana blues, and much more. It's all part of the Folk Alley mix. You'll also meet the performers and hear exclusive recordings, so I hope you'll join me each week on Folk Alley.
Saturday night at 8 on WSDL 90.7 FM.
Welcome back to Delmarva Today, Writer's Edition. I'm your host, Harold Wilson. And now for our drama, The Ocean at Night. Before Mr. Z can settle onto the wooden bar stool, Bobby has already wiped the counter and poured him a double vodka tonic on the rocks. He slides it now past several other patrons to this middle-aged man with the gold earrings and a thick black mustache that curls up at the ends.
Nice night, Mr. Z.
Mr. Z glances toward the darkening ocean, nods his bald head, and raises his glass. His motions are slow and formal.
Your health, Bobby. May you live long life.
His accent is Eastern European, maybe Mediterranean. Bobby has asked the guy 100 times where he's from, but the answer is always the same, everywhere. Judging by how much he spends and how often he comes in, almost every night, Bobby figures he's got money. Could be a Russian businessman, involved in import-export. Or maybe he's mixed up in something sinister, hence the secrecy. Whatever the explanation, he leaves great tips. So Bobby is happy to have him. On a lot of nights, the guy stays until closing, watching people on the boardwalk, looking at the ocean, or talking with half-drunk customers. Some nights, he wanders off to visit the handful of other bars on the boardwalk. All the regulars know him, but no one seems to know much about him.
There'll be storm tonight. Wind is coming up.
Mr. Z sips his drink and follows the last few minutes of a beach volleyball game under the floodlights. Then again, he stares at the black ocean and the tattered clouds passing over the moon.
Air is heavy, dense.
Mr. Z turns now to observe a young man sitting at the bar two stools down. The young man scowls, his shoulders hunched, his blue eyes wet, rimmed red.
Bourbon. Neat.
Ah, you desire to get drunk quickly, young man.
I'm not really here to talk.
Try rum in Diet Coca-Cola. Carbonated. No sugar. That will intoxicate the most fast. I read. Study. Bobby, a rum and diet coke for this man. On me, your best.
You got it, Z.
Thanks, but I don't need it.
Mr. Z moves to the young man.
There is woman. Yes? Always there is woman. Who is she, this woman? I can tell your bond with her is strong, or you would not need to drown yourself.
The young man looks at the bartender for help. Bobby pretends to be busy washing a glass.
Look, I don't want to talk about it right now.
I was in love. More than once. Two times it was.
The young man doesn't want to encourage this odd stranger, so he remains quiet, stares at his drink.
I loved the first one so much. I thought I could not leave without her. When she left, almost, I did not go on. What kept me going? Do you know what was it kept me going?
As the young man downs his bourbon, he realizes he's just too tired to fight.
No. What was it kept you going?
Curiosity. Yes, it is curiosity kept me going.
Curiosity?
I was not done with world. World was not done with me. As much as I wanted this woman, I knew world was bigger than anything I could imagine. End of one thing, always beginning of another. You are young. I think world is not true with you. Are you not curious to see what happens?
Curious? What happens? It'd be easier if she just left me. Maybe we should just stop trying.
What is name, young man? You are called...
My name's Max.
Max. Strong name is Max. Beloved one. Do you love her, Max, this woman?
Max closes his eyes and squeezes his forehead.
Yes. I love her so much. It scares me. But we keep failing. I can't give her the one thing she wants more than anything. She thinks I blame her.
Why are you here at the beach?
We were sure this time. We were going to celebrate.
And now you cannot celebrate anymore?
Max grabs the rum and coke Bobby hands him.
No. No celebrations.
Whatever you have lost, you must find way to persevere. You think this is end of story together? Perhaps, but perhaps not.
Max looks more closely at the swarthy man with eyes that seem old and young at the same time.
It can't be the end. I just don't know where we go next, what we do.
Is easy, I tell you. Take her drawers. Sit together in front of ocean midnight. Speak fears you have into wind. Can you do that? You can do that.
Max is starting to feel drunk. His nose numb and the edges of his vision soft. He thinks this Mr. Z must be crazy, but he'll humor him.
Yeah, I guess we can do that.
Then you move forward. Sit together in front of ocean midnight. Speak fears into wind, and you move forward.
Before Max can say anything, Mr. Z stands and throws a $100 bill onto the bar.
Change, Mr. Z?
Nah, cover tab of young man here.
Got it, Mr. Z. Calling it a night?
Perhaps. Perhaps not. Time to move on.
Outside, in the misty darkness, Mr. Z strolls the boardwalk. And then he finds her, Max's young woman. She is at the south end of the boardwalk, well beyond Funland. She is alone. How does he know who she is? Before he reaches her, he feels her profound sadness. Her sorrow is so raw, it almost stops Mr. Z in his tracks. Wide open emptiness, despair mindless as the sea, aching without end. Emotions Mr. Z has not felt for a very long time. She's sitting on the white bench, facing the ocean. Her cropped black hair is blowing across her face. Mr. Z clears his throat, careful not to startle her.
Excuse me, miss. Do you have a t-shirt, napkin?
The woman, maybe 30, looks over at him hazily. If she were not lost in grief, she would be more nervous about the strange man approaching her in the shadowy darkness. Darkness muted only by the thin light of the activity on the boardwalk.
Maybe. Let me look.
She unzips a shapeless cotton bag and rummages around.
Here, take this one.
Mr. Z takes it from her and blows his nose loudly.
Excuse me. Something there is about these salty breezes. Do you mind if I sit? One moment is all. I have long walk back.
Go ahead. I was just leaving.
May I first ask something before you go?
Sure. Ask if you wish.
Do you think ocean at night is good or bad?
She wonders why this weird old man had to bother her tonight of all nights. Maybe she should just walk away. Get up and walk away, she tells herself. But instead, she gazes across the sea to the line, the demarcation where the water meets the sky. She can barely make it out.
It's not one or the other. It just is.
Ah, yes. I agree. But this is favorite time on Boardwalk for me. Sun is gone. Moon plays on waves. Children home dreaming. So beautiful. So quiet. You cannot tell lie when looking at ocean at night. Did you know?
There is silence now, enhanced by the soft murmur of the sea. The woman shakes her head and wipes away a tear with the back of her hand.
You have lost something, yes?
Yes, two times now.
Ah, is child you want?
How did you know?
I know many things. Many things. I know joy. I know sadness too. I have lost things. Things lost when I came to this country. And people too. So many people are lost to me when I came. I had to learn to persevere. Now I watch.
What's your name?
I am called Mr. Z. Your name is?
Olivia. I'm called Olivia.
Ah, Olivia. Peace and fertility. Yes, even fertility. That is a lovely name for you.
Olivia doesn't know why she's talking so openly to this stranger about their losses, the stupid attempts they keep hanging every hope on. But she feels comfortable with this man. His gentle manner and his rich, deep voice are soothing.
It's my fault. I waited too long. My eggs are old or bad or something. We don't care about money. We don't want fame or power or even a big house. Just a baby. It should be easy.
Where is husband?
We had a fight. I think I'm driving him away.
Do you love him?
Yes, but I don't know if it's enough, you know.
Say goodbye.
I don't want to let him go.
Nah, to husband. To children. Say goodbye to children who left. Did you say goodbye to children who left?
Olivia likes this man. His face, the wrinkles at the corners of his eyes, the gentle smile lines around his mouth, even the small gold hoops in his ears. Before she can protest, he takes her hand and pulls her to her feet. They walk to the closest path, down to the sand.
Come, Olivia. Let ocean take sadness away.
Olivia doesn't believe the ocean has this power, but she goes anyway. She kicks off her flip-flops and lets her feet sink into the cool sand. Thinks how Max will scold her when she tells him she went to the water with a strange man. Then her feet are wet. She lets the waves wash around her ankles. Mr. Z stands back while she talks to the night, to the moon, to the constant motion of the sea. She thinks how nothing ever stays the same, how the waves, right upon the sand, erase what they have written and write again.
I love you, my little ones. I will love you forever. Goodbye. Goodbye.
The next morning, Max and Olivia splurge on breakfast at the Boardwalk Plaza Hotel. Max eats ravenously, like he always does when he has a hangover. Even though his head is pounding, he feels cleansed. A family of four waves at them from a bicycle Surrey as they roll by. Olivia sips her coffee and thinks about how ridiculous Max looked last night when he finally came crashing into their hotel room, plastered. With a plastic rose he had obviously stolen from the grotto's table. He had insisted they go back to the beach and sit near the water together. He said she needed to tell the wind her fears. She had blabbered something just to shut him up. Then back at the hotel, they had crawled into bed together. It was the first time in 3 days. Afterward, they slept curled against each other, calm and quiet, no anger, no tears. As they drifted off, a wild storm let loose, leaving the sea air light and fresh in the morning. Max doesn't mention the strange guy from the bar, and Olivia doesn't mention the man who led her to the ocean. They both wonder if maybe they imagined him as they stroll along a boardwalk that looks so different today than it did yesterday. All the same stores and benches and dunes are there, but the shadows are not quite so dark. The growing crowd seems less annoying. They pass Dolly's and the gazebo, then the ice cream shop and displays of hermit crabs in their cages. In their newfound closeness, Max and Olivia feel fragile, sea creatures without their shells. Olivia squints inside the arcade as they pass. A familiar voice makes her jump.
Oh, my God, it's the creepy fortune teller. He scared me.
I remember this guy. Hey, Zoltar, what's up?
Honey, he can't hear you, you know.
Come on. Want to know your fortune?
Oh, Max, they're always so lame.
Hey, watch it. You're going to hurt Zoltar's feelings.
Olivia steps closer to the mannequin in its old-fashioned wooden case. Zoltar looks like a gypsy. The thick black mustache, gold earrings, turban. He seems familiar, probably from all their visits to the shore. Max inserts a dollar bill and waits. Zoltar waves his mechanical hand over the crystal ball, and a ticket pops out below.
What does it say, Max?
Max looks down at the ticket, and then back at the mechanical Zoltar.
No way. There's no way.
Max, what? What is it?
Max takes Olivia's face in his hands and kisses her lips, then hands her the ticket. He watches her eyes get big as she reads.
Perseverance is the key. Your lucky number is 3.
I want to thank all our cast members for this excellent presentation of the drama, The Ocean at Night. Your host was the narrator, Mr. Z, Tom Welch, Max, Robert Forrester, Olivia, Judy Hearn, and Bobby, Jim King. And thanks to all of you for joining us. This is Delmarva Today, Writer's Edition. I'm your host, Harold Wilson.
You've been listening to a special writer's edition of Delmarva Today with their host, Harold Wilson. This program is produced on the campus of Salisbury University for Delmarva Public Radio. Christopher Rank is your audio engineer. Mary Seaman is the volunteer producer. Visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net, for podcasts of this program.